All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Functional Pharmacy and the Modern Alchemist podcast. I am Robert Kress here with you. Thank you for coming back for yet another episode. So, and, you know, self-admittedly, I will tell you these things aren't consistent enough. I tend to pop on when I get some inspiration and stuff like that. Although I'm going to make it more consistent for you because I've been actually getting a lot of nice comments on people that have gone back to past episodes. So today I want to talk about something that has, I've been inspired by. And I think mostly because it's been coming around to me a lot. I find myself talking about this certain topic, whether I'm sharing it with pharmacy clients, pharmacists that I'm training in functional medicine or even physicians, as well as patients, you know, when I work with them on a consult and help them understand what their labs mean and how they can approach moving forward for the best of their ability. So the topic today is nothing is absolute. And now this is kind of a core life lesson, right? This is kind of one of those like universal principles, I believe. But I want to talk about how it's a principle for your health, because I see way too many people get caught up in their disease. And they really don't focus enough on their possibilities of their health. And much of this is to do the way our system has been organized. We do not have an empowering healthcare system. It flat out, we don't, right? We've got a victimized healthcare system, and a healthcare system that serves the victim. It helps perpetuate victimization. And once again, when I say this, I'm not pointing fingers at patients. This is the way the system's been set up. We'd be better off in a system that empowered individuals. And, you know, there are many ways within our healthcare system we are going in this direction. Right? People can, self-care is a big word. It's a big catchphrase, but people can take things upon their own, and then they can reach out and search out the type of practitioner they're looking for, such as a functional medicine practitioner. And, you know, sad enough, it seems like the lines in many ways are getting even wider between what's an allopathic medicine practitioner and what's a functional medicine practitioner. And I fully believe, and I am witnessing the term functional medicine become bastardized. You know, people use it now as a catchphrase and a marketing term. When I think I wish we could just say good medicine or bad medicine, because to be honest, a lot of things that are led with functional medicine, I see being bad medicine or not good medicine, maybe I should say, because maybe it's not the intention of it. But we really like to take a complete holistic approach. And that is going to be one of my upcoming topics in the next few days as well. Do not skip over the foundations, because it's so critical. And I see people doing that all the time to do the more quote unquote sexy stuff, the more sexy protocols, right? The more sexy lab tests and stuff like that. When we've, you know, and I probably shared this with you before, you know, a lot of times, the recommendations I give people are get the hell outside and get into nature. I mean, we talked to someone yesterday in a consult, and she was kind of coming down on herself because she doesn't have the energy to get to the gym. I'm like, first of all, we don't know where your adrenals are yet. So I don't know if I want you in the gym, right? Like in a heavy cardio, but what about just going outside? What about being in nature? Like that's six steps from where you're sitting on your couch right now. And I'm not saying this to shame her. I'm actually saying this because we are so programmed oftentimes to think more is more. And we've got to do that, right? And we feel guilty and we call ourselves lazy. Not the case. We skip over a lot of these foundational elements. We have been birthed out of our primal DNA, you know, which was a time where we worked hard and strong, but we also kicked the hell back and relaxed, right? We also played. We also slept. We also just wandered in nature. Our DNA wants us, right? These are the foundations. That's another topic. So today, nothing is absolute. So I want to give you some examples on how nothing is absolute. So maybe you can parlay this into your own life on examples that maybe you have seen or heard or felt, whether with it's in your life, a patient, a practitioner, or whomever. Once again, my name is Robert Kress, functionalpharmacy.com. If you are a healthcare practitioner, a pharmacist, and you're looking to implement functional and lifestyle medicine to your practice, reach out to me, functionalpharmacy@gmail.com. If you're a dude and you're looking to make yourself healthy and you need a men's health program, once again, reach out to me, functionalpharmacy@gmail.com. If you're a female and you're also looking to bring your life back in order, to kind of find your purpose, to kind of gain your independence, to feel like you wanted, you felt before. And this is one of, you know, I'd like you to actually visit my partner, K Corpus MD. Reach out to me, functionalpharmacy@gmail.com. I can get you in the right space. All right. So nothing is absolute. First example I'm going to give you, and this is an absolute law to live by. Someone else's story is not your story. This came up to me recently. A family member has been diagnosed with a certain disease, and they have, through this family member's wife, they have connections with a lot of nurses in the hospital. All the nurses had the same story, and it was pretty much doom and effing gloom, right? Because that's their experience. So, and it doesn't have to be that way. So if you think about it, you were just nailed with this big ass diagnosis. You're scared to shit, right? And then you just get more like sad sack, sorry, fear stuff being thrown at you. What's that going to do to your psyche? I want you to understand, and this is another one. I'm going to throw another tendon in here. Our bodies have an inherent ability to heal if we provide them the environment to do so. It reminds me when in Atlas Shrugged at the end, when the looters asked John Galt what they could do, he said, get out of our way. Well, we need to get out of our own way sometimes. Our head needs to get out of our body way. You know, K-Corpus, my partner, one of her rules is that the body never lies, but the mind will lie to you. And it is so effing true. And the mind will lie to you out of fear. The mind will lie to you out of jealousy. The mind will lie to you out of anger, out of so many different things. It'll create its own stories. In the state of disease, fear can be quite prevalent, right? And you're looking for support. And I've seen too many people go into activities and actions, treatments, before really going through a well-thought-out process. So remember, someone else's story is not your own. Doesn't have to be that way. Take back, step back, take a breath. See what's available for you, build your health team. Another example, I'll give you one, another close one to me. Someone was diagnosed with cancer at one point. Neighbor had cancer years back, almost killed her. The treatments almost killed her. And, you know, you'll hear this a lot, and I guess you got to wonder sometimes with cancer therapy, is it the treatments that kill people first, or is it the cancer itself? And I don't mean to laugh to make light of it. It's just sometimes I look at it and you just, we got to stop and think, what are we doing to people? I mean, we're mutilating bodies. You know, you hear this mantra of we're going to hit it hard. You're going to hit what hard? I mean, you're going to hit my body hard? You're going to hit my healthy parts of my immunity hard? While you're just trying to get these little bugs that, yes, can be nasty and invasive, but is there another way? So for this example, the story that the neighbor had of their bout with cancer and the drugs they were on, the chemotherapy and the radiation, it sounded horrible. And as she said, it almost killed her. So once again, you're freshly diagnosed and you hear that story, you haven't even been to your oncologist, and where do your expectations go? So whatever you can do, just please understand someone else's story is not your story. All right. What's another one? Honestly, I can give that for myself too. I probably shared with you that I'm a back surgery person. I had back surgery in 1998. And when I worked in the pharmacy, I would share stories with other people that came in with back pain, right? So in many ways, I could have been making their story my story. And I did. A lot of them went in for surgery. So did I. Fortunately, I healed mine, and it wasn't through the surgery. That didn't do it. It was my introduction to the mind-body and the role that plays. That was the seed. So fortunately, I didn't let all their story become my story. Okay, what else? So a lab test is a view to hopefully uncover something that we don't see or confirm something that we believe we do. But that's all that it is. So In my practice, in our practice, well, two, in my professional and also working with patients, I do a lot of lab test reading and interpretation. And what I do is I bring this into people's health story. And everything from mind to body to lifestyle to supplements. So we wrap it all together. And, you know, it's been said in our practice, say, Kay and I, you know, it's the science and the soul. I'm the science, she's the soul. But nothing's absolute because she can speak really well on the science and I can definitely dabble in and speak really well on the soul. But we like to integrate, we like to wrap all this together in a patient's treatment plan. So two different patients can come with the same exact labs, say if we're talking about an adrenal profile or something like that, but a completely different backstory, a completely different lifestyle, completely different trauma spectrum, all that, completely different. So we approach it differently and we're going to treat them differently. So that's key. All right. Also, in my professional practice, when I educate and teach and consult with and mentor other pharmacists on how to read, I often get the question, like, they want it to be this equals this. Like, this is off, you give them this. This is off, you give them this. But it's not so. And that's what I say. Nothing is absolute. We need to know a little more because we might go about it differently. How about a diagnosis is only to get us in the right direction? So I kind of came across this thought years ago when I had my own pharmacy. This was probably in 2006, maybe. And it was patients coming in with like fibro and stuff like that. And I realized when I was sitting with a patient once, I'm like, man, a diagnosis can be a double-edged sword. A diagnosis, one, can either reaffirm the identity of illness that we already have. Right. So when I had my lower back pain, I had identity of illness to that. That's why I integrated and connected with all these other people. That was a challenge. But we have this and we carry it with us. So say you have someone with fibromyalgia. What does fibromyalgia appear to you as? Well, oftentimes it appears to you as almost a life sentence, almost incurable. But what if I was to suggest that fibromyalgia can be related to a number of different things. And that's why we need to look in a broad, deep way, broad and deep way. And we got to get to the foundations, like what's the patient's experience in life? What's their past traumas? What's their adrenals look like? What does their thyroid look like? Like, these are all things that absolutely can contribute to what would be called quote unquote fibromyalgia. So maybe someone has it or maybe they don't, but at least the good thing is it tells us what they're experiencing. So it gives us, it kind of wraps all their symptoms and their profile in a bag and drops it in front of us because someone thinks they have this, right? We see it with PCOS all the time. I can't tell you how many people I see come to us that say they have PCOS because a doc told them they do, but they didn't have the lab results that backed it up. Like the markers, I would suggest that. It was something simple like, I've got acne, right? So I want you to understand that diagnosis. There's a good of it, but then there's the bad of it. So we have to step out of what that might be. A genetic trait or mutation is not a guarantee to have that disease. Another one, someone patient recently said, you know, we are seeing the blood sugars rose. We talk about their lipids, another metabolic panel. And they said, well, you know, I'm not too surprised because diabetes runs in my family, although I eat really well. So once again, we got to understand, just because it runs in the family doesn't mean we're going to get it. So our genes and mutations, you know, we can turn good genes on or we can turn good genes off. We can turn bad genes on or we can turn bad genes off. And that's through epigenetics. It's the influence that we put on ourselves and our genes. It's such as the thoughts we think, the foods we eat, the exercise we do and we don't do. Okay, you get it? The nutrients that we take. Maybe it's the medications that we take. Some medications can trip on a gene. Other ones, not so, because, you know, they're reducing maybe some inflammation and then they can cut down on the IL-6 or something like that. So that's another one basically under nothing is absolute. Now, talking about a genetic trait or a mutation, I want to talk about pharmacogenomics for a second with you. Hey, all you pharmacists out there, this is really important because I know a lot of you are grasping onto this and I think it's awesome. So the science of pharmacogenomics is essentially going to help dial us in to find out what medications are best for a patient. Now I'll come from my purist point of view and I'll say, well, gee, I want to get the patients off. Most patients that come to want to get off medication. So, you know, I'm not going to spend time on that. But, you know, we also recognize the benefits of medications, and some people, it works well for them, right? Whether it's a crutch or long-term, you know. So recently had another patient where they had the profile done and the doc was putting them on an antidepressant and they put them on bupropion, which is Wellbutrin. So Wellbutrin is going to stimulate certain, help keep certain neurotransmitters up, dopamine, norepi, serotonin. This person, what it doesn't do, it doesn't take the whole picture, the whole patient into it, such as their life story, how they interact, their way of being, which is so critical. So their way of being, this person was highly tense. I would say their nervous system was tweaked. You know, they were someone that was always looking to not let people down, be there for everyone, always being on, never find time just to chill out and be down. And their mind would follow with this, and it was self-judgment and criticism. So when you have something like that, that could be a profile that's tweaking your adrenaline. Adrenaline is norepinephrine, epinephrine, right? So you've got someone in this realm where their adrenaline's already being tweaked, might put in a medication that can do the same thing. Possibly, maybe it can work for them, but maybe it can react to them. So it's not to say it was a wrong choice, but it definitely wasn't. It definitely didn't work for this patient. They had very, very bad side effects with it. When turned out, simple sertraline, Zoloft actually worked well for them. Right. So that's another one. I want you to understand that nothing is absolute. So just because it says this drug is good for you, maybe, maybe not. Lastly, I want to talk about the number needed to treat NNT. When you're given a medication or a vaccination, talk about vaccination. Oftentimes, you're made to believe that it's just 100% effective, but it's not. It's really important to understand this. What it does is it might increase chances of not getting it, but it's not 100%. And then you're going to hear things in the marketing that it's like 90%. We'll use a COVID vaccine, right? They were saying 90 to 99% effective. Well, the problem here comes down to the bean counters and the number players, because they're looking at a relative risk reduction or an absolute risk reduction. A relative risk reduction basically takes in no specific data, such as what is the patient's state of health, right? So let's look at it this way. If you're using a vaccine and you're not taking into account if the people are metabolic or not, if they have low vitamin D levels, if they're obese, if they have high blood sugar levels, we know for a fact that COVID itself, those patients are going to have a harder time with it. But someone that's generally healthy, adequate vitamin D levels, not metabolic, yada, 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 COVID's really not much of a risk, right? And we see that, you know, in our practice, every time someone comes to us with long hauler syndrome, it's usually something that's linked to it. It's either their adrenals has been kicked, their gut's been upside down. So it's things that we take a look at. So we get this 90%, but what if I was to tell you, so what an NNT, a number needed to treat, tells you is how many patients need to be treated with said medical intervention to prevent one case. The flu vaccine is actually 40. So it's 1 in 40. So you need to inoculate 40 people to prevent one case. Now, what are some of these other risks that can come in that skew those numbers? That's why we don't know. We think, oh my God, it's supposed to be 80, 90% effective or 100% effective. It's going to prevent me from getting the flu. And I also want to say there's power in belief. If you believe it's going to work, well, that's a notch up on your belt. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But I want to look at benefit versus risk with everything. And let's also look at some truths here. So with the flu is 1 in 40, so think about it. What if someone was very stressed and their cortisol was off? Well, stress and elevated cortisol can basically neuter the effectiveness of the vaccine. So that's one thing right there. Who's stressed? Well, college students could be stressed. Caregivers could be stressed. Everyone in this damn life could be stressed. Stress is a common thing. If you look at the COVID vaccine, I already shared with you that. You know, what if someone already is low in vitamin D? What if someone already is metabolic? Those things just increase the risk for getting disease anyway that the vaccine's not going to overcome. And that, so the number needed to treat, I mean, this came out in November a couple years ago when it came out. 1 in 256. So you need to treat 256 patients, people, inoculate to prevent one case. There's other ones out there. Like I'm looking up, what's the number needed to treat for statin drugs? But you can just Google these things. It's quite fascinating. So statin drugs, I believe, real world patients. See, number of patients need to prescribe statins in primary cardiovascular prevention. To prevent one cardiovascular disease for the lower and higher risk. So in higher risk categories, 146 patients, you got to prescribe it to prevent one. Lower risk, 53. No, I'm sorry. So in the lower risk, 146 patients. So if you have low risk for cardiovascular disease, statins really, I mean, you got to, it's like one in 156 will benefit from it. But then we got to look at the risk, right? Depletion of coenzyme Q10, liver, inhibition of certain enzyme patterns, brain memory issues. So for someone that is a higher cardiovascular risk, 53. So once again, someone that's come to the table with a bad heart, you want to do all you can. You got to 52 of them and the treatment's going to fail. It's not going to prevent it, right? Now, I'm not saying this to tell you to stop your statin drug. I'm saying this so you can understand that nothing is absolute, and that allows us to go a little broader. You know, if you're coming to me with cardiovascular disease, I want to see where your inflammation is. I want to see where your high sensitivity C-reactive protein is. Maybe we're going to check some fibrinogen levels. We're definitely going to look at an NMR. So we're going to look at a fractionated lipoprofile to see what your lipids really are. I mean, a lot of people don't really know that, but the standard cholesterol test, that's an estimate, right? So we can dive deeper and then we can find out if you have good LDL or bad LDL and how many of them. So these are where we need to take it. So that's why I want to say nothing is absolute, although we can do a lot of things in our favor to weight the odds. So Robert Kress here, functional pharmacist, lifestyle pharmacist, the modern alchemist. I appreciate you for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed this. And I'll be back shortly. Have a great day. Reach out if you have any questions. Functionalpharmacy@gmail.com. Follow me Instagram, Rob Kress FRX. Twitter, Rob Kress FRX. Kind of ran a little bit on there. Facebook, Functional Pharmacy. I think that's it. And www.functionalpharmacy.com. You take care now.